all the people. Because in eating, I like to see us participate, at least in that level, with the same equality and great opportunity. The Soviet Union is a reliable trading partner, as the world knows. This is generally known and recognized fact. In recent years, the USSR has been successfully developing business relations with such Western countries as the Federal Republic of Germany, France, Italy, and others. The United States is not among other countries, in spite of the fact that many people in the U.S. business world want to develop mutually beneficial trade with the USSR and are striving to do so. At the present time, the United States administration is again making attempts to use trade as an instrument for bringing political pressure to bear on the Soviet Union and is suspending some business contacts with these aims in view. However, some of her capitalist cohorts are not cooperating. Policy of pinpricks. But this is a policy of pinpricks, and it cannot produce the results for which certain political figures in Washington are hoping. The development of relations between the USSR and the USA must be approached as a whole with an eye to the broad political prospect, taking into consideration the weight of both countries on the world, seen in resolving the disarmament problem and strengthening international security and détente, that is, peaceful accord, before we see the world brought into the hell of the Holocaust of World War III, nuclear war, that hangs over the heads of all humanity like the sword of Damocles. This international political climate depends on a large measure on the trend in the development of Soviet-U.S. relations. All this must be taken into account by U.S. statesmen. How many people cannot help asking the question, what final choice has been made in Washington, for confrontation or cooperation? No discrimination. The Soviet Union, the vanguard of liberation in the world, has always favored the vigorous development of trade, economic relations with Western countries, including the United States, and a mutually beneficial basis without any discrimination. Dozens of U.S. firms and banks now have permanent missions in Moscow. They could conclude mutually beneficial contracts in the Soviet Union if Washington did not put up discriminatory barriers as a result of the Jackson-Vanik Amendment to standby. As a result of the Jackson-Vanik Amendment to the Trade Act, which was adopted in 1974, the Soviet Union, as a matter of fact, has been denied most favored nation treatment, which is widespread as an ordinary and natural condition in the practices of trade and economic relations. Most favored nation treatment would not ensure any special privileges or benefits for the Soviet Union. When Senator Jackson was pushing his amendment through Congress, Jackson flung the Democrats' right-wing stance. This is Oleg Anikin, Soviet writer. He had the single aim of bringing pressure to bear on the Soviet Union so that it would change the Soviet laws regulating the rules for leaving the country for abroad in favor of such aggressive forces as Zionism. This was crude interference in the Soviet Union's internal affairs. But the Soviet people cannot be made to live according to American laws, as the senator would like them to do. Yet what has been achieved in the long run by Jackson and those like him? What has been achieved? Senator Jackson's aim has not achieved the aim that he wanted. The Soviet Union has refused to conduct trade with the USA on discriminatory terms. And now, some years after the amendment was adopted, it has finally become clear who has gained and who has lost from this. American businessmen now openly admit that the greatest loss has been suffered by the United States itself, which has missed the opportunity to secure profitable contacts with the Soviet Union. Because the Soviet Union believes that the only way that there can be competition between the two economic systems is by, in the economic arena, it's impossible, it's exclusive to the peace of the world, to consider anything else. I would like to give another commentary. The timely action in 1968 safeguarded socialism in Czechoslovakia. The mass media in a number of Western countries are at present looking back at the events which took place in Czechoslovakia in 1968. As was the case many years ago, they are expressing their regrets about the lost 10 years ago of opportunities for improving socialism in that country, so-called. In reality, these regrets are an expression of mourning over the abortive attempt to restore capitalism in Czechoslovakia and sever it from the rest of the socialist community. As was stated at the December 1970 plenary meeting of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia, by August 1968, a counter-revolutionary situation had emerged in Czechoslovakia, and the country was on the brink of a civil war as a result of an acute political crisis which had been provoked by the right-wing anti-socialist forces and which had swept all spheres of social and political life. The country faced an urgent question. Would counter-revolution, with the backing of international reaction, CIA elements, do its evil work, or would the socialist forces rebuff counter-revolution, uphold socialism in Czechoslovakia, and strengthen the front of socialism in Europe? Aware of their class national and international responsibility for the fate of socialism in Czechoslovakia, thousands of communists, whole working collectives, and representatives of various sections of the Czechoslovak society, including members of the Party Central Committee and deputies of the National Assembly, were seeking a way out of the grave crisis. They saw the right-wingers in the party leadership were not taking measures to curb counter-revolution and prevent a civil war. They raised that the domestic forces capable of routing counter-revolution were insufficient and asked the leading bodies of other socialist countries for help in protecting the socialist gains of the Czechoslovak people. And now, analyzing the lessons of the crisis in the Communist Party and in Czechoslovak society at the time, the December 1970 plenary meeting of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia passed a resolution in which it described the international aid of the fraternal socialist countries and the entry of Allied troops into Czechoslovakia on August 21, 1968, as an act of international solidarity which fully accorded with the interest of socialism, the vital interest of the Czechoslovak people, and the interest of the socialist community as a whole. The plenary meeting described the act as necessary and the only correct solution, but one which also followed from the commitment recorded in the declaration of the Bratislava Conference of Fraternal Communist Parties on August 3, 1968, to the effect that it was the common international duty of all of the socialist countries to support, strengthen, and protect the socialist gains won by the heroic efforts and selfless work of each nation. The frontal counter-revolutionary attack was thwarted, and the hopes of the imperialist circles for a revision of the results of the Second World War and the isolation of Czechoslovakia from the USSR and other socialist states were completely dashed, and so are we glad. The international action of the socialist countries in defense of socialism in Czechoslovakia created important conditions for the overcoming of the crisis in the country by political means. Czechoslovak communists and all those who upheld socialist gains could now develop a broad struggle against the anti-socialist counter-revolutionary forces and strengthen socialism in their country. Relying on the will and support of the healthy forces inside the party and the Czechoslovak working people, and new party leadership headed by Comrade Gustav Husák was able to take the country out of the crisis, restore a normal situation in the Republic, successfully continue the work of building socialism, and strengthen close ties and cooperation with the Soviet Union, the motherland of all of we who are socialists and other fraternal socialist countries. Being part and parcel of a powerful socialist community, Czechoslovakia today plays an active role and occupies a respected position on the international scene. This role is defined by its achievements in the economic, cultural, and social fields, and its close all-around cooperation with the Soviet Union and other socialist countries. The most spectacular achievements have been made by Czechoslovakia over the past 10 years, between 1969 and 1977, its national income increased by 52%. This is miraculous. Industrial production rose by 67%, and productivity in agriculture by more than 25%. Neither under unemployment nor inflation exist in Czechoslovakia or any of the Warsaw Pact alliance. The contribution made by the Czechoslovak working people and their communist vanguard to the strengthening of the positions of world socialism and the strengthening of peace is greatly appreciated by all those who hold dear the interest of lasting peace, détente, which means peaceful accord and international cooperation. From the Voice of America, as we give you the propaganda that emits from that source, there has been accusations the Western nations have lacking courage in dealing with the issue of South Africa. South Africa's parliament has elected former Prime Minister John Vorster, who was a pro-ally of Adolf Hitler, as the nation's new president to succeed Nicholas Dietrich, who died last month. Dictator Vorster of Union of South Africa's election to the largely ceremonial post followed his resignation last week as Prime Minister for health reasons, if you care to dignify him by calling him Prime Minister. In the presidential balloting, Prime Minister Vorster won easily over two opponents due to the overwhelming parliamentary majority of his rule, National Party, his ruling National Party, Christian National Party. The government is headed by the new Prime Minister, Peter Boyser, who is retaining his previous portfolio of defense minister. Prime Minister Boyser today told newsmen that if the major changes are to be made, an announcement will be coming after his first cabinet meeting next Tuesday. Several hundred black Americans staged a Harlem demonstration on the steps of the Capitol building this very day, demanding that the Senate pass legislations aimed at the reducing of unemployment. This is the first note of mass movement in U.S. in some time, since the striking mine workers who gained not one iota because of bossism of Meany, who had been a former agent of the CIA and refused out of his vast, wealthy treasury to give any assistance to the striking mine workers. The demonstrators came to Washington from all parts of the country to participate in legislative workshops sponsored by the Congressional Black Caucus. A bill already passed by the House is the top legislative priority of the 17 congressmen who comprise the Black Caucus. A federal judge here in Washington has scheduled a hearing for later in the day to consider what to do about the nation's rail strike. The four-day strike has virtually shut down America's rail system. If allowed to continue, said the Voice of America, it could cause severe economic hardship. Layoffs have already been ordered in the automobile industry, which is heavily dependent upon the railways, to ship both parts and assemble cars. On Thursday, Carter ordered railway workers to return to their jobs. The president also appointed special mediation board under federal law, which provides for a 60-day cooling-off period. But the federal judge failed to back up the presidential order, and railway workers have remained off their jobs. The so-called democracy of USA is having some difficulty in maintaining its stance of prosperity and justice these days, because the president has been threatening to use martial law. It was martial law that ushered in the reign of terror of Nazism. After all, Adolf Hitler, through machinations, was elected in Hitler's Germany. A special federal grand jury in Baltimore, Maryland, has indicted 18 persons on charges of fraud in connection with corruption within the General Services Administration. But according to many critics, left and liberal, this is only the very trimming of the top, just a action to appear to be house cleaning. GSA is the federal government's chief supplier of equipment and housing and conducts over $5,000 million worth of business nationwide annually. Two of those indicted Friday are former or present managers of GSA office supply stores in the Washington, D.C. area. The indictment stems from a 16-month investigation into alleged extortion, rigged contracts and payoffs within the government agency. Similar grand juries are meeting in other U.S. cities, and more indictments are expected. Ethiopia, according to Voice of America, and Cuba have signed an economic and scientific and technical cooperation agreement. Under the accord, Cuba is to assist Ethiopia in agriculture and irrigation industry, commerce for economic planning, Cuba gave Ethiopia military support in defeating Somalia's forces in the Ogaden earlier this year, as they rightfully should. Zambian security forces have rounded up another 500 foreigners suspected of living in the country illegally. So far, some 5,000 foreigners have been seized in a campaign aimed at fighting a crime wave, supposedly, and reducing unemployment. Most of the foreigners are from Zimbabwe, Zaire, Tanzania, and Somalia. And the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization has endorsed a plan to improve self-sufficiency in food on the African continent by 1985. The death of Pope John Paul, the Catholic Church has been, for the first time, faced with the death of two popes within a period of 2 weeks, has stunned and dismayed people in Rome, as it has throughout the religious world. The initial reaction of disbelief has given way to questioning and wonder, why did it happen and what is to follow? Let us hope that people are beginning to question the justice of the God that does not exist in the universe. Pope John Paul's was the second shortest reign in history. Never before, however, has any pope in such a brief period won such admiration from his flock, nor held out so much promise for his church as did Pope John Paul I, according to the Voice of America. However, we have noted from liberal left, Scandinavian socialist, and the communist world that Pope John Paul was anti-communist through and through. To the average man, he was all that could be hoped for, says Voice of America, a warm and human man, a pastor and a guardian of the faith. And many people here in Rome are convinced that no other pope like him will ever again sit on the papal throne. Oh yes, one greater than he did, Pope John. Already it is being said that he will rank as one of the great popes, the popes of the Church of the Universe. That's quite a statement of... stand by, please. Go back. Had a heart attack early this morning by his secretary, Reverend John McGee, who went searching for him when the Pope did not appear at his normal hour at his private chapel. The lights in the bedroom were on, and the Pope was lying in his bed as though he had been reading. There was nothing in the Pope's medical history that indicated a heart condition, although he did suffer with rheumatism, and has twice over the years been hospitalized for lung conditions, which doctors said were not tuberculosis. John Paul's body now lies in state in a hall in the Vatican, and the thousands that file by do so silently and almost without emotion. Many of them say, two such tremendous shocks in less than 2 months.
Here he died.
What? What are you saying to me?
Sorry, mistake.
What's the matter?
No, sorry, mistake happened.
Where am I at? Where am I at now? Yeah, take me back, because this all went out on the tape, I expect.
Sorry, Dad. Stand by.
Did you hear the word tuberculosis, the last word, tuberculosis?
Yes, it was tuberculosis.
You got that word?
Yes, right here.
Well, stop it then, and I'll go on.
Okay.
Now go on after tuberculosis.
Okay.
I said more, but I want to cut that all out. Okay, ready?
I'm ready right.
Hmm?
I'm ready right now.
All right. Pope John Paul's body now lies in state in a hall in the Vatican. And the thousands that file by do so silently and almost without emotion, many of them say, two such tremendous shocks in less than 2 months is too much. The government here in Italy has declared official mourning. Schools are being closed, as are theaters and cinema houses. An airline strike already in progress was quickly canceled. My, the Church of Rome does have, God's Vatican does have great effect on labor. The church bells of Rome will be tolling mournfully twice each Sunday, and the Sacred Congregation of Cardinals, now administering the church until a new pope is named, hold its first meeting on Saturday to launch the same series of ceremonials and rituals that were observed by Pope Paul VI, less than 2 months ago. We are saddened by the death of any. We are not religious, we are atheists, as all dialectic materialists are, as all Marxist-Leninists must be. In Washington, both President Carter and Vice President Mondale have commented on the death of the Pope. Wish they could comment as well on the conditions of the poor, the impoverished, and the political prisoners that are in the prisons of the USA. The President said that during the brief weeks of his reign, Pope John Paul had captured the imagination of his church and of the world, and he no doubt had the promise of combining his predecessor's finest qualities, reaffirming what is enduring and strong in the Catholic tradition while expanding the frontiers of the church to cope with the needs of the modern world. Vice President recalled that he had represented President Carter and the American people at Pope John Paul's investiture just a few weeks ago. That occasion, said the Vice President, confirmed his initial impression of the new Pope as a man of wisdom, simplicity, and striking warmth. Vice President Mondale added, "We are bound, now that he is gone, to pursue the hopes and expectations that he excited in us. Unfortunately, we are not able to get what we want. Perhaps it will be possible through our kindly guests from the Soviet Union to obtain tapes of Radio Moscow, even though we would be playing them late. All we were able to get from Radio Moscow is commentary. Many Soviet people know more than one foreign language. Over 35 million are involved in classroom study of foreign languages. A large number of these students are studying English. Some Soviet people are studying English on their own. They do it in a variety of ways. One example, some college students and some research workers in a town in Siberia spent 10 days together on the River Kuga, where when they returned home, they were speaking a very fluent English. They had spent the whole 10 days reading nothing but English from morning to dark, talking English and reading English. And I think we will probably have to learn Russian the same from the tapes that have been so kindly provided by us by the consul of the great USSR, who is our guest now, our honorable guest. As simple as it seems, this method would be hard to use on a massive scale. A more practical method is one developed by a Bulgarian linguist who made a Soviet experiment. The method behind this one is to force the brain to memorize to full capacity by persuading the student his brain does have the potential. The learning of new words has a new meaning. It's possible for some students to learn many words a day, upwards of 100. But by using this method, they've been known to learn hundreds of new words and phrases at colleges in Moscow that have tried the method in just a short time. People have supplied themselves a good knowledge of English in only 1 month, studying 4 hours a day. But there are other methods also. Linguists at Moscow University prescribe the sleeping method. The student is exposed to new words and phrases while sleeping in this way. He can gather 3,000 words in the mind in 2 months. It has been proven scientifically. This has been a tremendous breakthrough. Many daycare centers in the Soviet Union not only teach reading and writing plus arithmetic, but a foreign language also. Makes our hearts pant as the heart doth for the water brook to be in the USSR, doesn't it? And to see such a tremendous variety of education for children in the day school even, learning arithmetic and foreign languages too. Most of today's 35 million students of foreign language in the country are learning in a traditional way. They began studying a foreign language in the fifth grade. Their language may be English, German, or French. In 5 years, they have learned the grammar and phonetics in the Soviet Union. And by the time they graduate from high school, they know studies begin in the second grade, so that in the final years of high school, three subjects can be taught in that language: history, geography, and literature. The students also corresponded with young people in countries where these particular languages are spoken, and they travel in those countries. Every graduate in the Soviet Union is supposed to know at least one foreign language. And a tremendous show of understanding and achievement. Thus ends the news and commentary the brief sort that it is today. We urge you for new ideas in the suggestion box for incentives so that we can have, as we said, great feasts and banquets for the people, rallies and festive collective banquets for the people. Thank you so much. Much love.
Okay, do you have anything that's really an emergency?
What you do?
You copy?
I have a couple things.
Who was considered anti-communist has just died of a heart attack.
Okay.
It seems Rome was having some trouble to find a successor to the seat of St. Peter. We are always solved when a human being passes from the scene. We hope that this will be at least an opportunity out of this painful grief that a more progressive pope, like Pope John, who was known as the Pope of Peace, will be reinstated, will be established. Stop. Cancel, please. What was that last sentence I spoke about where I said reinstated?
Let's see. Stand by. I'll find out.
That whole sentence. I'm not having very good success today.
He has the Pope of Peace would be reinstated.
Okay. The Pope, I didn't say that. We hope that Pope of Peace, like St. John, Pope John.
Yeah, Pope John.
Okay, I got you.
Okay, ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you want?
We shall hope that a Pope of Peace, like Pope John, a great peace advocate for coexistence and so forth, will be elected. Carter's meeting today with elements of the Trilateral Commission. As you know, in the United States, the Trilateral Commission and Brezhnev, the chief aide to the president, security head, is really the power behind the scenes. We have reliable information from Harper's and Playboy, both what you would consider capitalist organs, stating that it was a shoe-in for Brzezinski, who is a neo-fascist, who talks of genocide in open terms. Jokingly, he spoke of leaving a circle to go to speak with some people in his office about genocide. He has, in his books, advocated a kind of Superman position. He is also an advocate like People's China, gone mad by the doctrine of three worlds, that nuclear war is inevitable, to talk in terms that nuclear war, said Brzezinski, chief aide to President Carter, is certainly acceptable means of warfare and defending democracy, so-called, joke, the ruling class, he should have said. He should have said ethnocentric in the first place, which shows his ignorance. Newspapers seem to agree that the purpose of the meeting of the heads of the Security Council, this is another bit of news, is to head off Zambian anger over the oil sanctions scandal. The Daily Express of London says that meeting will be a humiliating experience for Mr. Callaghan, the Prime Minister of the Labour Party. The Daily Telegram describes the British Prime Minister's visit to wherever I cannot decipher as a pilgrimage. The paper says that some other person is desperately anxious to end the Rhodesian upheaval, which has almost ruined Zambia. said that he and the British American government are prisoners of the African militants. Well, that's, of course, interesting bit of news, that he and the Americans are victims of the African militants. It is the Americans and her imperialist lackeys through NATO that are stirring up the African cauldron. They suggest that two leaders should be looking for a new, more realistic plan for solving the Rhodesian problem, Carter and Callahan, that is, on terms which will enable the whites to remain in Rhodesia and in, I don't catch this word, I presume it must mean South Africa. The Times says that Mr. Callahan will not be going to Nigeria if he did not think it was of the greatest importance to British interest to give President of Nigeria prompt and public satisfaction. Nigeria has been moving more and more independent of Western imperialist circles. It's an oil-rich nation of OPEC, as you know. African accusations say that Britain was all along on Smith's side, as has been reported repeatedly by socialist circles. Since UDI and the row over the oil sanctions make it hard to counter such accusations, though they are mistaken and must be denied, the Times says that Britain will be under pressure for a new and real British commitment to bring Smith down. I would think so, when the Zimbabwean Patriotic Front under Robert Mugabe, nationalist, and rather Robert Mugabe, Marxist-Leninist, and Joshua Nkomo, nationalist, represents 97% of the people of Zimbabwe. Another paper said a minority government in Britain will have to rule out the use of force for this purpose. The Guardian has editorialized on the Israel attitude of the outcome of the Camp David summit, or should we say sellout, on the Middle East. There's been irate reaction, even in the reactionary regime of the Shah of Iran. All through the Arab world, there's deep resentment that Zionist, expansionist Israel and Egypt, more or less a satellite or puppet of U.S. imperialism, and USA had the audacious nerve to negotiate the West Bank, which was taken by force from Jordan, and Lebanon, South Lebanon, which is occupied by the aggressively neo-fascist Zionist state. It is unfortunate that the Jewish people, which have been in the past some of the greatest friends of change, were led astray by the capitalist trick of Zionism. The Guardian, Manchester Guardian, I presume, writes almost everything that Begin has said since the signing of the agreement has been to provoke the Arab opponents or humiliate Mr. Sadat. He urged to, I don't catch it, I'm trying to listen and tell you at the same time, he urged that things are irresistible by his continued assertion of Israeli presence in occupied Arab territory. Begin, who I would call, to be kind, reactionary Prime Minister of Israel, seems determined to go on poisoning the world. The Guardian advises the Israelis not to push their luck. The paper says that the Camp David agreement represented in the ultimate in what President Sadat could give. Israel gave the agreement the most liberal interpretation in favor of the Palestinians. This is, of course, capitalistic news, and you have to read between the lines. Obviously, Israel has not given any concession in the situation. The liberal mail, who carries a large feature page, report from a correspondent in Nicaragua. There has been 10 days of armed rebellion against the country's military regime. The article is headed, "The Ruthless Revenge of General Somoza," who, by the way, is continually being backed up by military with military hardware by multinationals from you know where, Washington. And the article described aerial and arterial bombardment by his fascist government forces. Somoza has been in power for 44 years after a U.S. Marine invasion of that country. It goes on to describe, as I said, bombardment by government forces against densely populated towns. Whole sections of the towns are said to be burning, gutted, and stinking with corpses. The Morning Star comments on Nicaragua. The paper says that despite President Carter's interest in so-called, we should say, in human rights, if he really were interested in human rights, he would do something about the numerous thousands, as in a moment of truth, Andrew Young said, were in our own political jails, as well as the Wilmington 10 who were glaringly political prisoners, and the Puerto Ricans that have been kept for 30 years for their resistance to occupation, really, by a foreign power. Puerto Rico was invaded by the United States. They wish their independence. For the most part, polls show that they do not wish to be a state of the United States. His only intervention in Nicaragua has been to suggest, Carter's is, that is, that General Somoza should exercise control over the murdering troops. Well, that's nice. I'm sure he would say something much more pointedly if he had to discuss various CIA spies, as he recently did, who were convicted with clear evidence in the Soviet Union. At the same time, says the paper, an American journalist is visiting Nicaragua to offer more military aid to the regime. Isn't that nice? America is so two-faced. She really... Stand by. It's a correspondent, foreign correspondent for New York. Often the foreign issues of U.S. journals are a little bit more honest and, should we say, liberal than those for U.S. consumption. An American journalist in the New York Times is visiting Nicaragua, and he said that the USA is offering, the government is offering more military aid to the regime. The Costa Rican people have bravely withstood all efforts to get them involved, though it seemed their government was being attempted to be manipulated by the USA and her lackeys into the horrible, barbaric murder of the citizenry of Nicaragua. The main points of the news, the foreign secretary and I believe that's Dr. Owens, I can't hear clearly, are leaving London this a.m. to meet the president of Zambia. The meeting will take place in Nigeria, and Rhodesia and Libya are expected to be the main topics. Israeli Prime Minister Mr. Begin says there have been general misunderstandings on the part of the Camp David agreements dealing with Israeli settlements of the West Bank. Mr. Begin, dictator of Zionist Israel, and that's my own subjective feeling, who is now on his way home, will have a talk with Mr. Callahan. Though do not underestimate the number of laboring class Jews in Israel who oppose the Begin policies. Moves are being made to unite dissidents in Eastern Europe, and Polish and Czechoslovakian activists have announced plans for an international something. I wish I could hear it. An international symposium or something. It is not clear. The Organization of American States has begun discussing the crisis in Nicaragua. The Organization of American States is considering sanctions. Nigeria has lifted a state of emergency which has been in force for 12 years. They're, as you know, promising new elections. Let us hope. Railway strike in USA, it appears likely that the president will use his authority under existing law to declare a national emergency, which of course he has right at his fingertips, just as all of the pseudo-democracies have, as Hitler had when he set up the interesting situation in Germany by taking a mental patient out of a Dutch hospital, placing him at the Reichstag, his secret police, the Gestapo that is, and putting oil cans around him, combustible instruments, and then setting fire to the Reichstag, the parliament building in Germany. And as you know, he was also accused of being this mental case of being a communist. This happened after even Hitler had been named chancellor and given a great deal of power, where 5 million communists were still showing their courage at the ballot. It was only then that he gained enough power to begin the repression that led to the horrible concentration camps, which indeed killed many, many communists, socialists, not only Jews, but all those who resisted fascism, which is the final state of monopoly capitalism. There is no other place for monopoly capitalism to go. Union sources say the law does not say that it was intended to handle situations where the strike is actually started. So if a work to order comes, union spokesman heads can answer the question to the legislative representative. And they made it clear that he thinks that they are not required to go back to work. But certainly we saw the 115 miners who struck bravely that were in near poverty. And they, in fact, were in poverty. The only union that gave them any assistance was some food help from a garment labor organization, which has been for the Soviet Union for many years. And good old Mr. Meany, who was a boss, which makes it difficult in the United States for any revolutionary ferment. You have to have an active Communist Party, very strong, and independent, at least active socialist movement, and an active and free trade union movement. Unfortunately, we lack some of those elements today in the United States, to say the least. Though there's some brave people that we speak with, and we'll be anxious if we could be of any assistance upon the advice of our Soviet brothers and sisters. But at this time, we saw that we would have been devastated. Our seniors would have been destroyed with the fires being set and the assassination attempts on my life and my wife. And so many children, little children, are trying their smears, their press smears, plus all of the other horrid things to close our school. I suppose every agency in the United States started an investigation simultaneously against us, and looked like we could never live through it. But we have survived, thanks to socialism. Next move will probably come from President Carter at a press conference scheduled to begin within the hour. South Africa has a new prime minister. I did not catch the name. Who for 12 years served as the country's defense minister. His views are well known. He is a hardliner on racial apartheid, a fascist. Most of the leading leadership of South Africa were actually allies of Hitler during World War II, and he's a hawk on military matters. The claim that he could send the country to war if he chose, but he did not this time. He promised to work for better relations between the races. John Voister, who retired as prime minister, if you want to be so kind as to call him an elected official, because of ailing health, so-called, has been nominated for the largely ceremonial post, whatever that is. I cannot detect over the news. The static is too bad. President Carter, speaking, is making all the moves preparatory to ordering railway workers back to work for 60 days. Of course, I'm sure he is. labor has begun to wake the sleeping giant of labor, something we have not seen in an apathetic America that is increasingly racist in every nook, crook, and cranny. The last 3 days, the strike has threatened three-fourths of the U.S. labor system. Secretary Marshall speaking, the Norfolk and Western, BRAC, have been unable to reach an agreement during the past 26 hours. I am going to say, stay in touch with both parties and urge them to continue their negotiations. Secretary Marshall says the President has received a recommendation from the National Mediation Board, that is, Secretary Marshall is of the Railway Union, to set up an emergency board under the Railway Labor Act. The Union Labor Council, James Kennedy,